I think our benediction here has some inspiration for us, some thoughts on where we've gone wrong and what we might do about it. In this line, support the weak. When the men, and they were men, whose busts are in the Capitol, whose portraits appear on the walls of the White House and the center, portraits of our money, when they grew determined to create a new nation for all the noble and ignoble reasons they did that, they looked to some thinkers who had pondered human nature and proposed reasons for us to create government. Why do that in the first place? And in what way did the government that they already had in England fail them? Two of these thinkers, John Locke and Thomas Hobbes, had very different ideas of what human life would be like without government. But they agreed in this: unless we form a compact among us that protects and constrains all of us, a government, then any of us can be at the mercy of any other. Locke said, "The law of nature obliges everyone that being all equal and independent, no one ought to harm another in his life, health, liberty, or possessions." The law of nature to him was reason, and he admitted reason fails quite a lot. And Hobbes said that the job of the government is to procure the safety of the people. And by safety here is not meant a bare preservation, but also all the other contentments of life which every man, his words, which every man by lawful industry without danger or hurt to the commonwealth shall acquire to himself. Without that protection of our lives and our health and whatever property we lawfully and respectfully accumulate, Hobbes said, we live in a nation where every man is enemy to every man. Now, neither of these men was poor. They received university educations, they owned property, and likewise, the founders, Washington and Adams, Jefferson and Paine, Hamilton and Jay and Madison, they were men of relative means, free, white, male, propertied, educated. In some cases, if we'd had an aristocracy, they would have been it. Nevertheless, and for all that that clouded their sight, they did perceive that any of us is at the mercy of others, potentially any other, if we aren't all governed by some kind of laws and some kind of authority to see that the laws are observed. The rule of law may have a very conservative tang. Maybe that's shifted in recent years. But really, it's fundamental and completely nonpartisan. Now, as Jane said, weakness is usually just the vicissitudes of life. None of us is so rich that we can't be made poor by someone else's stealing our property. Okay, maybe some of us are that rich. Very few. None of us is so powerful that we can't be harmed or killed by someone else's violence. All of us, any of us, may be weak in the face of another's determination to control us or harm us or rob us. And so we create a government that will protect us. These people had seen the evils of a government that ruled over people without the people having a voice, without having representation. So they set up a system that they thought would be better. Everyone would be equal under the law. No one would be allowed to use superior strength to harm or rob anyone. And if they did, their victim would be able to take their case to court, to the government, an appeal for justice. In other words, the commitment to support the weak is at the very cornerstone of this country. Now, there were problems from the get-go. For more than half the population was excluded. Abigail Adams warned her husband, all men would be tyrants if they could. She must have read her Hobbes. She was a very educated woman. Or she just observed abuses by men who weren't constrained and treated women as if the women had no right to their own property, even the property of their bodies. Native Americans and the majority of African Americans who were enslaved had no voice in the government. In the case of African Americans, the people who enslaved them had more power than the people of free states. So their enslavement drew the chains of enslavement tighter. And of course, people under 21 had no voice at all, other than what others might give, offer them on their behalf. Still in all, the principle was enshrined. The laws are in place. The government and the process of creating new laws preserve them so that the weak will not be at the mercy of the strong. And so we went along. If someone tried to exert their superior strength, you know, you could take your case to court. If someone tried to use that superior strength to harm you physically, the government that we had made was there to say no one has that right and protect you. And we were constrained by the laws. We can't use our superior strength to harm someone or deprive them of their property. Equal justice under law. It's a powerful way to support the weak, whoever that might be at a given moment, which any of us could be. Lacking in physical strength, ill, friendless. So, how do we get from that ideal to here? Well, as I said, government fails in its support of the weak if we're not all equal under the law. And people pointed out all along that laws were selectively enforced, applied some more to some than others. I could list lots of ways that we didn't do a great job, haven't done a great job of constraining the strong. But piece by piece, especially when it comes to the franchise, and some other rights, we expanded the protections. We resisted when force tried to keep women, black people, from exercising the rights that they had on paper. Gradually, we chipped away at all the other kinds of oppression that somehow had been missed by the people who created the laws. And we'll continue to do so. Through it all, because, and to the extent that the law was compelled to regard everyone equally and be shaped equally by everyone, might did not make right. That would be a state of war, all against all, such as Hobbes had nightmares about. A state that favors whoever's strong at the moment and crushes whoever is weak at that moment. Then there have been inflection points. In the 1960s, a movement started to decry the rule of law. I don't mean the articulation of civil disobedience, which has been with us from the beginning. There always seems to be room for a little thoughtful refusal of laws that, although agreed upon democratically, somebody passionately believes are unjust. But another movement decried the rule of law as kind of a drag, man. Why do we have to have these rules? Can't we just go along? Listening to each other, just doing the right thing. There's the inflection point of the rise of libertarianism. The argument that laws telling us what we can do with our own property are unjust. If I make money producing widgets, libertarians argued, still argue, a law that tells me how my factory should be run is putting its hand in my pocket. Taxes are theft. Not surprisingly, it's been mostly the strong who make that argument. People who don't feel themselves needing the protection of the laws, feel themselves constrained and burdened by them. The people with more money who wanted to keep that money. The people who could afford an education, who didn't see why they should pay taxes to provide an education to those who couldn't otherwise afford it. And that unthinkable development of not even having a free education for 5 through 18-year-olds is definitely on the table right now. And then, of course, we had the inflection point of Citizens United, which said that the more money you had, the louder you could shout. Most people have a limit of what they can give to a campaign or a candidate, a limit by law, and a limit by what's in our pockets. But given the right way, easily created loophole, and one person can give hundreds of millions of dollars. Perfectly legal corruption of our democracy into an oligarchy. The chance of keeping money from influencing law, keeping a few powerful people from influencing how we do things and who really has power and who is protected, they got slimmer. Democracy's always been precariously balanced on the lip of the volcano of oligarchy in this country, and it was tipping closer and closer. Instead of government supporting the weak, the strong spiraling ever upward to more influence and more opportunity to buy more influence. More power politically, economically. Meanwhile, laws could be enforced selectively and often were. One of the great inflection points also, of course, was Martin Luther King and the movement that he helped lead. One of the great counterweights, pressing always for true equality under the government's laws and true equal power to make the laws. You know, the founders really underestimated the role that government would have in shaping the economy, economic power. And those left in a weakened state by these government decisions would be increasingly treated as a problem for not government to solve, but for charity to solve. So that even hearing the phrase support the weak in a political setting, you might think, oh, the people who are sort of left out along the margins, but not the question, why do we have a government that creates such wide margins? Such big cracks in the floor of safety. But I'll talk about that in a few weeks when we come to the line, help the suffering. So another inflection point is when a president came along and said that at that moment, government wasn't the solution to the problem, government was the problem. People soon forgot his qualifying phrase and began to take as gospel a line that would have appalled the founders and Locke and Hobbes before them, that government is a problem, is a burden upon the people. In fact, a good government is a problem for the strong who wish to overpower the weak. A good government is good news to those who want to support the weak. And so we came to 2020. When the strong sought to overpower the weak and overthrow the constraints of government. Elections, of course, partial and imperfect as they are, support the weak in that a weak person gets exactly as many votes as a strong one. Yeah, the system we've built is rigged in favor of voters from less populous states, and we have that funding problem. And there's still suppression of the vote by force or threat of force. But in one respect, the voting booth evens out the power imbalance. When you get in there, it is one person, one vote. So the outcome of that fair election was clear, and the loser scrapped the law and turned instead to a war of all against all. The war against which Hobbes warned. The battle that Locke said would be joined if reason failed. Harassing officials, trying to set up an alternative system, and then, of course, a mob overpowering the few Capitol police who aren't there in numbers to resist an army. 4 years later, few people, and none of the leaders, have been held accountable. And now, the bullies have been returned to power. By our own choice. And so we're at another inflection point. One of the age's most uncertain hours. A government that will not support the weak has failed in its most basic duty. And we, who weakly commit to support the weak, have our job clearly described for us. Pressure the government by all legal and nonviolent means to become the bulwark, protecting all of us from those who would do violence, from those who would try to make might the ruling power, rather than the rule of law, the rule of justice, much less equality or compassion. We've heard our call to action. We say it to ourselves out loud every time we gather. With this community to strengthen us